Secrets can lead to misunderstanding. Misunderstanding can cause fear. Everyone knows what fear can do. We are here to learn and shine the bright light of truth on these stories. You will know why Show Me Scares.
Hello.
Hey there.
I'm Shayla.
And I'm Terry.
And you're listening to Show Me Scares.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's quite an intro.
You like it?
I do.
Awesome.
How are you?
Good. How was your weekend?
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yes. So, listeners, we went camping this weekend at Stockton Lake. And I had never been to Stockton Lake, but it was a lot of fun.
It was.
It was exhausting.
It was hot.
It was very hot. And,
We camp old-fashioned way in a tent.
We checked out early, a full day early. Everybody was exhausted, and it was looking like it might storm, so we decided head on home and not deal with the rain.
And we slept for hours.
Yes. Very hard sleeping when we got home.
But it was fun.
It was fun. It was good fun. We did a lot of swimming, fishing. A little fishing, a lot of sitting around talking. Mm-hmm. That was good. That was a lot of fun.
A lot of relaxing.
Yeah, very relaxing.
What do you have for us today?
Today, we're going to talk about somebody who I would think a lot of listeners have probably heard of.
Really?
Because she's kind of infamous when Ooh. You think about Missouri true crime. So, actually, countrywide true crime, because everybody knows her name because it's a crazy story. Kind of. We're going to talk about Sharon Kenny.
Yeah.
So let's begin with her birth, shall we?
We're going way back.
We're going all the way back to her birth.
Let's do it.
Sharon Elizabeth Hall was born on November 30th, 1939 in Independence, Missouri. The summer after she turned 16, she met Brigham Young University student James Kenny, who was 22 at the time. The two dated all that summer, so kind of a summer romance, and then James returned to Utah back to school in the fall. Sharon was very interested in James, or at least interested in the thought of getting out of Independence, and he kind of seemed to be the ticket for her at 16. She's very young.
Wow, yeah.
She phoned James to tell him that she was pregnant with his child.
Oh, my.
Yes. So James takes a leave from school and rushes back home and marries her.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. The couple were married on October 18th, 1956. The marriage license said that Sharon was 18 and a widow. Apparently, she had said that she lived, because they lived in Washington for a very short time, her family did. They had moved there and then moved back before she was 16, so she was very young. And she claimed that she had married a man while she lived in Washington and that he had died in a car crash.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's the story she told, and I couldn't find anything that said it was true, said it wasn't.
Like before she married this guy?
Mm-hmm. So what, 14, wow. 15 years old? I don't know. It has been reported that James's family did not like Sharon.
Well, she sounds sketchy already.
Well, but they were also devout Mormons, and she was not Mormon. They felt their son could have found a nice Mormon girl to marry rather than an outsider and bring them in, right? The newlyweds returned to Utah for James to continue with his school. After just one semester, though, James dropped out and they moved back to Independence.
Ooh.
So she had her ticket out of town and ended up right back where she started from.
Well, that plan didn't work.
Yeah, not so much. The couple first rented a house near James' family before they built their home. Sharon would babysit, and James worked as an electrical engineer at Bendix Aviation.
Well, that's not too shabby.
No, it's not too shabby at all.
Especially back then, I'm sure.
I would say, I mean, engineers make some money, so I think they were probably doing okay. Sharon claimed to have miscarried the baby that led to the marriage, but she did get pregnant and give birth to their daughter, Dana, in the fall of 1957. That's not too long after, really. That's just a year later, so... Sharon liked to live beyond her means and spent money faster than James could make it. So he made good money.
But it's going right out the door with her.
She was real good at spending it. But she also liked men.
Mm.
She carried on numerous affairs throughout their marriage. James worked the night shift, which made that even easier for her. One affair that went on for many years was with a man named John Boldese, that she actually knew from high school. So they had been on again, off again.
For a while.
Yeah. Since they were kids. So their second child, a son named Troy, was born in May of 1959. Some reports say that by 1960, James was thinking about divorce.
I'm surprised he waited that long.
Sharon's spending was out of control, and he had suspected that she was being unfaithful. I mean, she's busy, so I don't know how he would miss it, but... They also claim James' parents had urged him to stay in the marriage because they were against divorce, being devout Mormons.
Yeah. Since you didn't listen in the first place, now you just deal with
it. Yeah, you made your bed, bud. You gotta sleep in it. At one point, Sharon had agreed to divorce James if... One, he would give her the house. Two, give her $1,000. And three, leave their daughter Dana with her. I guess she didn't give a shit about the boy. But I do want to say that I think I found another birth date for Troy, which was actually almost a year later than what it says he was born. So
weird.
I'm not, that date is, you know, may not be exactly the date. So. On the evening of March 15th, 1960, Sharon called police saying there had been an accident. They found James in bed with a gunshot to the back of his head. He was rushed to the hospital, but he died on the way. According to Sharon, they were getting ready to leave for dinner at church. James was cleaning his gun, and she was in the bathroom putting on her makeup. She heard Dana, who was 2 years old at the time, say, "Daddy, show me how this works." This was followed by a loud pop. When she ran into the room, Dana was holding the gun and James was unconscious. There were powder burns on the pillow next to James. He was laying on the bed as though he were sleeping. The shot was directly to the back of his head with a .22 caliber target pistol.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's blame it on the daughter.
Mm-hmm. Detective Browning was the investigator assigned to investigate the shooting. Sharon was visibly shaken, and she seemed legitimately in shock. At this time, Sharon was a beautiful 20-year-old that had a way with words and with men. We talked about the men. There was no gunshot residue test ran.
Why?
At the time, the test for gunshot residue was a paraffin wax test in which hot wax was poured over the hands and then the hardened wax was sprayed, like it was peeled off, and then sprayed with a compound that would change colors in the presence of GSR. And whatever she said, the police decided that it would be not right to subject the young mother and the child to having hot wax poured over their hands. So they completely skipped doing the GSR test.
Oh, she's smooth.
Yeah. There was some doubt in the mind of Detective Browning as to whether the child was physically capable of pulling the trigger or even working the gun at all. So they brought the child a gun that's similar to the one that she would have used, okay? And she was able to flip the safety on and off several times. She seemed very familiar with it, and she pulled the trigger a few times as well.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The case was ruled accidental homicide, and Sharon Kinney collected $29,000 in life insurance. That's the equivalent of about $250,000 today.
For killing her husband. I mean, for her kid killing. Come on.
I know. I mean, that's just sick. I wonder if she let the little girl know, like, if that was her plan, is to, what, never tell her what happened to her dad? I mean, how are you gonna approach that conversation later when she says, what happened to my dad?
For real. Because, you know, there's papers out there that states.
Yeah, there is.
Daughter killed.
Yeah.
Father. God. Wow. That's horrible.
It's terrible. One of the first things that Sharon did was go out and buy herself a brand new Thunderbird.
Using the money wisely. Mm-hmm.
She told the salesman, Walter Jones, that she had recently come into the money and that she had always wanted a Thunderbird. Walter Jones was an ex-Marine who had married his high school sweetheart, Patricia, and settled back in Missouri after his discharge from the service. The couple had been married 5 years and had 2 children. Patricia worked for the IRS as a file clerk, and Walt was a car salesman. Obviously, he sold her a car. Shortly after selling Sharon the car, Walt began having an affair with the young woman.
Damn it, Walt.
Yeah, well, that's what she does. While Sharon thought Walt was a good candidate for husband number 2, Walt had no plans to leave his wife and children. On Wednesday, May 25th, Sharon told Walt that she was pregnant and she wanted him to leave his family.
Pulling that card again.
Yep. That's her MO. We saw it with the first marriage. But this didn't work. He broke up with her.
She said, I'm
pregnant. Yeah. She says, I'm pregnant. And he's like, well, I'm done. He returns home that evening around 11 p.m. to find Patricia waiting up for him. And she is pissed.
Uh-oh.
She suspects he's having an affair. Why else does a car salesman need to be in the office till 11 o'clock at night? Mm-hmm. The couple have a heated argument before going to bed. Thursday morning, Pat is still upset before her carpool arrives to pick her up from work. For work, sorry. Walt comes home that evening and finds that she's not arrived home yet. And she doesn't come home that night.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. The next morning, he goes and files a police report and begins calling everybody who would know where she might be. The people in her carpool says that she received a call while at work, and the woman on the phone told her that her sister was having an affair with her husband and she would like to get together to discuss this further.
Uh-oh. That can't be good.
Patricia asks the people in her carpool to drop her off at a street corner where they saw her get into the car with a woman driving a Thunderbird.
Wah, wah, wah. No.
That was the last anyone had seen Patricia. Walt realized this has got to be Sharon. And so he goes and confronts Sharon Friday night, asking what she knows about Pat's disappearance. Sharon admits to making the phone call and having a conversation with Pat, but she insists that she dropped her off not far from the Jones home on Thursday evening. She comforts Walt, telling him everything will be fine. Patricia's probably upset and decided to go stay in a hotel and just think and be away. She just didn't want to be with him right now. She wanted to be alone. That's probably what's going on. She's just pissed and she'll be back. Whenever she's ready and she's calmed down, she'll come back home. Calm down. Hours later, around midnight, a man out driving made a gruesome discovery. In a popular Lover's Lane location near the Oak Kroll Farm on Phelps Road, he found the body of a young woman matching the description of Patricia Jones.
Oh, my heart.
Yes.
Poor innocent woman.
Completely innocent.
Mm-hmm.
He called police and he was there when they arrived. The man said that he had been out for a drive when he remembered he had to pee.
Remembered?
Yes. I know. The officer questioning him was pretty suspicious of his story because it would have been really difficult for him to see the body as far off as it was where his car was parked, especially because it was dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says that he walked off into the grass a little way so he would be away from the road because he was nervous about somebody seeing him.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever, dude. We all know you guys don't do that.
Detective Browning was assigned to the case. The police found the body with 4 gunshot wounds from a .22 caliber gun. There was one on each side of her neck near her collarbone, one to the left side of her face, and another to her abdomen.
Good grief.
There were powder burns on the hem of her skirt that was lifted over her, and her underwear had been ripped away and thrown nearby. This was an indication that there could have been a sexual assault. So right away when they see the scene like this,
they instantly think.
Yeah. Which would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
There are no shell casings, and the only bullet found was the one that went through her abdomen and was located after much searching. There was a wallet nearby, and I'm not really sure if that's the truth or not, because I did hear another story about the bullets, that they actually exhumed her body later and pulled out 2 bullets so that they could have the bullets. Why they didn't do that before burying her?
That's weird.
Yeah. So I'm not sure which one of those is true, but anyway, they did have a slug from somewhere, mm-hmm. from her. There was a wallet nearby with the license of Patricia Jones inside it, and the angle of the shots indicated that she was likely on her knees facing her assailant when she was first shot. So the crime scene has been cleaned up. I mean,
like staged?
There's no shell casings. There's no, I mean, everything's kind of cleaned up except for what you want to see, like what they want you to see mm-hmm. there. And so they're just hoping that the autopsy gives them something more, because the crime scene has pretty much been cleaned.
Mm-hmm. So they follow their tracks really well.
Yes. Walt is brought in for questioning, and he quickly admits to the affair with Sharon Kinney. Detective Browning recognizes this name from the case involving the accidental death of her husband just a few months before. They have also brought in the man that found the body, John Boldese.
Boldese.
Yep. He eventually admits that he was not alone when he found the body. The place was a spot where he and Sharon Kinney went frequently.
Well.
And she had been there that evening with him. She had asked John to help her search for her missing friend, and the two had driven around for hours searching before he suggested going to park at Lover's Lane. And that is when Sharon spotted the body and pointed out the dress was the same color her friend had been wearing when she disappeared. So she told John to take her home before he called police, because she was the last one to have seen that woman alive.
She had planned that the whole time. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. On May 28th, Detective Browning goes to Sharon's home to ask her to come in for questioning. And she just makes a whole bunch of excuses why she can't go. She don't have anyone to watch her daughter. Her nails are drying. I don't know. But
her nails are drying.
So Detective Browning, from what I understand, he agrees to take her to her mother so that she can watch the kid while she goes to the police station. And from what I understood about all this is he kind of ends up like driving all over the place, taking her different places, ending up sitting outside of a salon waiting for somebody to get their hair done to wash the kid. Like, he does all kinds of crazy shit
just to get her down to the police
station. But like, that's how manipulative she was, is she had this policeman just doing all these things, and he's like, what the hell am I doing, finally, and says, no, we're going now. So
like a light bulb, like, what am I doing?
I mean, he believes in his mind she's killed 2 people that he knows of, and he still just falls over and does what she asks.
That's how good she is.
Yes, exactly. When he finally questioned her, she seemed to have an answer for everything.
Of course she did.
She admitted she called Pat and she took her for a drive, and she told her that her sister was having an affair with Walt. And she told her it was her sister because she didn't see why she should be mad at her, because Walt was the one that was cheating on her. So,
of course,
she shouldn't be at fault there. She claims to have dropped her off near her home around 6 p.m. and met up with her brother at 7 to run errands for a birthday party. When Walt came and confronted her, this is still her story,
mm-hmm.
she said he was maniacal. He was furious that she had told him about the affair. or that she had told Pat about the affair. Sorry. He knew about it. She didn't have to tell him.
I was like,
She says that he was so mad that he put a car key, I think, up against her throat. Like he was going to slice her throat with a car key, I guess. I don't know. But
stab her in the jugular.
Walt actually admitted, yeah, I did that. I really did that because I was that mad. So I'm not sure what he was going to do with a car key. I mean, I'm sure you could fuck somebody up with a car key, but I'm just saying, like, that's a weird
thing. All he had now.
But it happened, apparently. So she says she was scared that night after Walt left, and she called John to help her search for Pat because she's like, I got to find her now because this guy's going to kill me if I don't find her. They had driven around, and then she said he was the one that suggested going out there. It wasn't even me.
Mm-hmm.
Which he also said he was the one suggested it.
He's covering for her.
It was a popular spot, she said. Anyone could have taken Pat out there and killed her. It was just a coincidence that she happened to be the last one to see her and was there when her body was found.
Yeah. That's some coincidence.
Mm-hmm. And so she just walks right out of the jail that day, or the station that day. Happy. Fine.
She's so lucky.
You don't even know the half of it. It's about to drop a bomb right now, okay?
Okay, bring it.
After questioning Sharon the first time, Detective Browning gets some very frustrating news, to say the very least. The coroner botched the autopsy.
What?
Patricia's body had been washed and embalmed before they realized it needed to have an autopsy performed.
What the freak?
There is absolutely...
How does that even happen?
Screw up. There is absolutely no physical evidence that is usable on the body at all.
Somebody dropped a bomb big time.
Big time. Somebody surely got fired over that, right? So they do obtain a search warrant for Sharon's house, where they find a box for a .22 caliber target pistol with a serial number 287708. So they have the serial number, but they can't find the gun. Sharon claims that she lost the gun on a trip to Washington a couple weeks before. The gun had only been purchased about 2 weeks before, like right before her road trip. And so she said that it was for her protection on that trip. And she lost it while she was on the trip. You know, you just misplace guns all the time.
The thing you purchased for protection, you just misplaced.
Not very smart if that was true. Sharon has no problem at all coming back in for questioning, saying she just wants to clear her name.
Mm-hmm.
She sits through 13 hours of interrogation. All the while, she is smug. She is abrasive. It's like a game to her.
She's enjoying this.
Oh, yeah. She thinks she is too smart. And obviously lucky, right?
Obviously.
Even with the evidence, as flimsy as it was, they make the decision to charge her with both the murder of Patricia Jones and that of her husband, James Kinney, now.
So they don't charge her right now?
So they look back at the other case and they're like, meh, we ain't buying this one now. So they charge her with both murders.
But they don't have nothing right now.
No, they don't really. I mean, everything's circumstantial. I mean, she was the last one seen with her by a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then she found the body.
Ooh.
It's so
I wonder if they get the guy that drove her out
Boldies?
There. Yeah, to break or something.
Oh, my.
Oh, that guy must be in love with her.
Yeah, I think he's kind of a dipshit.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, he's kind of like the dumbass that hangs around, that little puppy that hangs on her all the time and will do anything. Mm-hmm. He's that
She can manipulate
guy.
Him to do anything.
Yeah. I think he probably always thinks there's a shot. He's always going to be the next husband or whatever.
Kill me next, please.
Yeah. Sharon Kinney became front page news. She was an instant celebrity.
That's what she wanted.
Yes. I mean, she was on the front page of every newspaper on the months leading up to her trial. And the trial actually ended up delayed because she was not lying about being pregnant.
Oh.
Yes. She gave birth to a baby girl on January 17th, 1961. Now, she was adamant this was not Walt's baby. It was her husband James's child. But
does that add up?
If you do the math, if you go from the date of his death, so the day he died, not even before his death, to the date of the birth, it's 44 weeks.
Mm.
It's possible,
but
probably not. I don't know. I mean, you decide on that one. I'm just going to leave it at that. I mean, I'm sure people have carried babies to 44 weeks. But, I mean, I don't know. I've never had a child, so I can't speak to that.
But on that note, how soon did she spread her legs after her husband's killing?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Sorry, just throwing that out there. She could mourn a little bit.
But the death of Pat Jones was 2 months after her husband's death. So she carried on an affair and apparently got pregnant, she mm-hmm. said, and everything within 2 months after his death. So there was no waiting anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Surprisingly, by her side the entire time were her in-laws, James's parents.
Wow.
Yes. Sharon had restricted their access to the children. And so
there it is.
So her attorney had went to them and said, made this offer, support her in public, stand by her side, and you get more time with your grandkids.
Oh, that's so horrible.
It is. She was going to be tried first for the murder of Pat Jones, since they believe this to be the strongest case of the two, which is really not a good thing. The second autopsy put the time of death at 6 p.m.
Hmm.
The defense attacked the circumstantial nature of the evidence, especially the timeline, because they argued Sharon could not have killed Pat at 6 p.m. out there, staged the crime scene, and made it all the way back to meet her brother at 7 p.m. She couldn't have done all that in an hour. I don't know. I don't know the distance. I don't.
It's a lot to do in an hour.
But that's what they claim. Mm-hmm. Okay. The prosecution was able to find the man who owned the missing gun before Sharon. So from what I understood was some friend of Sharon's, some man friend of hers, probably another one she's sleeping with, had purchased this gun for her from this man. He was a pilot, I think. And he had testified that there was an old stump out behind his property or something, or on his property, and he would fire into it during target practice. And so he says, hey, there's probably some slugs in it if you want to go see.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge says both the prosecution and defense can go out and see if they can find.
I'm surprised they didn't run out of the courthouse then.
I know. I don't know that they didn't. Both the prosecution and the defense go to the site, and the stump is cut apart in slices. There is one .22 caliber located in the stump. Unfortunately, it was inadmissible.
Why?
Because the chainsaw had cut right through the bullet.
You're kidding me. So. The one that they need.
Uh-huh. And that's the only .22 caliber in the stump. The trial ended in a not guilty verdict.
What?
She's acquitted. The jury had taken only an hour and 35 minutes to deliberate. How's that?
They didn't even have anything, you know, to prove that she did it.
They really didn't, no.
They blew the chance with the chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
God.
When the verdict was read, the courtroom erupted in cheers. Spectator. What? Yeah. They were so happy. Everybody was on her side.
Hmm.
She was gorgeous. She was so charismatic and everyone loved her. Spectators, like in the audience, if you will, and members of the jury ran to Sharon to get her autograph.
What the actual?
Yeah. That's messed up. Ugh. Before the next trial started, so the death of her husband, the police convinced John Boldese to ride around with Sharon and try to get her to confess. So they wanted him to get her to admit because she had apparently offered him $1,000 to kill her husband. They were trying to get her to admit that. And there was a detective that was in the trunk of the car while they're driving around. Wow. Recording the conversation.
Why did he have to be there?
I don't know. But Sharon wouldn't take the bait. She never confessed to anything, and she wouldn't even really talk about it. It was like he would bring it up and she'd be like, oh, have you ever thought about how the stars shine? Mm-hmm. Like she would do something like that. And so they were not going to get her. She was too smart to say anything.
She knew better.
Yeah. So they settled for a written statement from John stating that before James's death, Sharon had offered him $1,000 to kill him. But when he took the stand at her trial, he claimed that she was just joking. And she never meant that. She never meant it to be taken literal. They just laughed it off after she said it. It was a joke. Yeah. So the prosecution, he's a prosecution's witness. And the prosecution ends up cross-examining him. Like, it becomes very heated, saying, that is not what you said.
Like, you're killing me.
You're going back on your words. You did not say that. You thought she was absolutely meaning that. So
that went out the window.
Yeah, it actually sucked. So, but luckily, regardless of that, Sharon Kinney was found guilty of the murder of her husband, James, and sentenced to life in prison.
Wow. I'm surprised that she actually got charged.
Right? After serving around 18 months, the Supreme Court overturned her conviction.
Oh.
So apparently her trial was delayed so much, and you have to have like a certain number of jurors for it to be like a juror pool for it to be an accurate, I don't know, representation of the population, right? And she was supposed to have had a certain number, and she had like 20 less than that. So the juror pool wasn't as big as it should have been. That technicality was what it was. It was the juror pool. So,
what the heck?
Yeah.
This woman.
The second trial ended in a mistrial. The third trial resulted in a hung jury.
I can actually see this, though.
I know.
With what they have on evidence.
Mm-hmm. Sharon was out on $25,000 bond, and she was just living her life. Her fourth trial was set for October of 1964. On September 19th, 1964, police in Missouri get a call from Mexican authorities. They have arrested Sharon Kinney for murder.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. While awaiting her fourth trial, Sharon had met Francis Pugliese. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but... And the two had ran off to Mexico together. She had no travel restrictions, so it wasn't like she broke any rules by going there. She was allowed to travel. As long as she came back for her trial, she was allowed free to go where she wanted. And so she is being held for the murder of Francisco Ordonez.
In Mexico?
Yes. A man she met in a bar before going to his hotel room.
Oh.
Yes. She also shot a night clerk when they came to see what happened.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they dubbed her La Pistolera, like Lady Gunslinger, because she shot the place up pretty much. Right. They're like, damn, she just shot two people. The only two people that were there at the time. Like, so she's a gunslinger. She claimed the man had tried to rape her. And, like, she, like, backed into a table or something, and a gun fell out of her purse, and she fired to scare him, just to scare him. But he was shot twice in the back.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, so there's that. The police searched the room that she had been sharing with Pugliese. So the one that she went down there with, she was just doing some other guy in another room. And the other guy is just, I don't know. Like, oh, that's Sharon. Oh, she'll be back in a little while. I don't know. So they search the room that she's been staying in with him, and they find two more guns.
Good Lord.
Yeah. One, Pugliese, man, I'm butchering that, I know, said belonged to him. So one of the guns is his. And the other one, he's like, this is hers. It was a .22 caliber target pistol with the serial number 28770 8.
Score!
An investigator with Jackson County prosecutor flew to Mexico to retrieve slugs that they had fired from that gun. After two rounds of ballistics were done, it was confirmed this was the gun used to kill Patricia Jones.
But she's already been not guilty on that.
Because of double jeopardy, she cannot be retried for it after being acquitted.
That's awful.
It is awful.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, that sucks.
So bad.
Yeah. And that means she had it the whole time somewhere.
True. They dropped the ball on that.
Yeah, they did. But Sharon Kinney was convicted of murder by a Mexican court and sentenced to 13 years in Mexican prison.
That's it?
The story does not end there. No, it does not.
No, I mean, that's only 13
years? 13
years?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess Mexican prison sucks. I mean, I would think any prison sucks.
Yeah, for real. I'd be crying in prison.
I don't know. Maybe their system isn't the same. Mm-hmm. Maybe 13 years means 13 years. And, you know, here 13 years means
five,
two or three. The story does not end there, like I said, though.
But she's in prison.
Yeah. For 13 years, though. So, but, no. On the night of December 7th, 1969, Sharon Kinney vanished from the prison after serving only 5 years. It was like 4.5.
What do you mean vanish?
She literally vanished. So, there's a few stories about how she did this. One story said, so one thing that the Mexican authorities said was that she had cut off her hair short, colored it black, and she wore men's clothing while visitors were at the prison, and she just walked out the door with them when they left.
Surely not.
That was the story that the Mexican authorities told. And the Mexican authorities were like, dude, we screwed up. We're really sorry. Like,
how did she do all this without anybody knowing? Like, dyeing her hair, cutting it off. Like,
oh, they knew that. Process. They knew that.
Oh.
Yeah. She could color her hair and cut it. That was fine. And then they believed that the strange man with the clothes that didn't fit him correctly was probably her that walked out the door with the visitors.
Jesus.
Yeah. But Mexican authorities also said they had also told beforehand, so before this, they told this story, they had also been saying that she had been using platinum color on her hair to cover the grays that were coming in. So there's all kind of inconsistencies. And there's another story that it was during a movie night at the prison, which I think maybe was when the visitors were there. I think they were there for the movie night too, like mingling with family.
Their prison must not be too strict.
Right. During this movie night, there was a power outage, and when the power came back on, Sharon was gone.
I could see that happening.
There was one story said that she squeezed through a window and jetted out of there. I don't know. But they believe that she had help from a man that had visited her in prison, and I think he was some kind of police officer of some kind, formerly. And he had visited her in prison, and he was wanted for a recent robbery.
Oh.
And he went missing the same time Sharon did.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, he might be dead if he's screwing with her, but, you know.
No shit.
News quickly made its way to Missouri, as there was still a warrant out for her arrest here. She would have been brought back to Missouri for her fourth trial after her release from Mexican prison. So,
she's gonna be in prison for a while.
Yeah,
but she got out.
Yeah,
she escaped.
Yeah,
gross.
Sharon Kinney was never captured after escaping from prison in Mexico. There was an episode of Unsolved Mysteries that covered her case in 1998, and they did this really cool thing. Like, they told the whole story and all that, like normal, and then they showed an age progressed photo of her. What she would look like at that time.
How old would she be right now?
Today, she would turn 81 this year.
Wow.
In November. So she could still be out there.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
She's slick.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if she ever kills again. Or killed again.
I looked at the age progress photo and was like, I've seen her somewhere before.
Of course, God, of course you did.
I'm like, I think I worked with her back in Winona.
Oh, you're such a nerd.
I really feel like she worked at the factory or something.
gosh. That would be some, like, town to go to, though. Some little town.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You just roll into town, everybody's going to believe gonna who know. You are. Nobody's going to care. Oh, man. I don't know. I also think it would be easy for her to stay hidden in Mexico or any part of Central America. You know, like... I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's crazy.
There's a lot of places I feel like you could hide as a fugitive. And I think...
You know, there's a lot of fugitives out there.
There are. It's scary.
It is.
Yeah, there's another one that I want to do. That woman actually got caught after years and years and years. But really? I don't remember if it's in Missouri, so I might have to break the Missouri rule on that one. But it's a cool story.
What? Yeah. Break the Missouri rule?
I know. We'll have to break the border. Anyway, that is the story of Sharon Kenny.
What?
Isn't that wild?
It is.
Like, how lucky is she?
That's insane. Like, she's so smooth.
Yeah. So, very first thing, no wax test performed.
Because she talked them out of it.
She talked them out of that. And they couldn't do that to a mom and her little girl.
Right after losing the husband.
Oh, man. And then the autopsy's botched. That's crazy.
Like, then they cut the one slug in the tree?
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah. Supreme Court overturned, so they screwed up on her trial. And then
unbelievable.
She walks out of a Mexican prison.
Like, holy crap.
I mean, I really feel like at this point, just let her go, man. Like, it's not even worth it anymore. And clearly, somebody wants her out. Somebody real. Thinks she, that she needs to be out. I don't know.
She must have a lot of connections, though, if you think about it.
I don't know.
Hey, did you know?
Oh, are you doing a Terry's Truth this time?
It's about this case, though.
That's excellent.
Oh. Or you don't give me a little jingle?
Ding, 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 dong.
Oh, that'll work. Boom. So Sharon currently has the longest outstanding arrest warrant for murder in Kansas City, Missouri.
It's a long one, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She has one of the longest outstanding felony warrants in American history. American history.
Yeah.
I mean,
so the country. I believe it. That's crazy because, it's still open as far as I know. I've never heard anybody say... Well, we're tired of this. We're going to close it.
Yeah. Well, she could be 80-something, so she could be still out there. We better leave it open.
Man, I wish they would catch that bitch. Don't you?
That'd be hilarious.
But then she would probably die like 2 months later, and they'd be like, what are you going to do?
Truth.
But, I mean, at this point, could she... I mean, I think she could definitely make the case that she couldn't get a fair trial because of how infamous her case is now.
I don't know.
I mean, I've heard about it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but I'm kind of a psycho and listen to things like that all the time. And, I hear all the big ones. So, but I would think anybody who's really into true crime, especially if you're looking at Missouri,
they will know this
Sharon
one.
Kenny. Mm-hmm. Like, you know who that is. So, I don't know. It could be a good argument, probably. But I want him to catch her. I want to see what she looks like now.
I just
want
to see where she's been.
Yeah, that too. She'll probably be like, I'm not telling anything. And I'll be like, bitch, talk.
Put you in there with her.
Let me at her.
Wow. She's probably not even in this country.
Probably not. I don't know. I don't know where she is. But Sharon Kenny, if you listen to our podcast, will you please come forward for me?
Just so we know where you're. Well, no. Just how you did it, like, stay disappeared so long.
Yeah, I promise I won't turn you in.
What are you kids? Shut up over there.
I'm just trying to draw her out, okay? I could be a hero, okay?
Oh my god, too.
Contact us at showmescares@gmail.com.
You're such a moron.
Oh shit. Somebody's going to email us, like, from a fake email, and I'll be like, oh my god.
It's her. So, question.
Yeah, sure. Shoot.
Sure, shoot?
Shoot.
Any information on her children that you could find?
No. And I think they were probably protected by their grandparents.
I hope so.
Because they went to James' parents, from what I understand.
And good, because they went through heck just keeping a relationship.
Yeah. Exactly. So I did find her son, I think, Troy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only one. The daughters I couldn't find, but their names change when they get married and stuff like that.
They changed them anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that would be interesting, wouldn't it, to talk to one of them?
Ooh. Maybe they don't even know.
Oh, no. I feel like they were so young. They probably don't even remember her.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. For them.
Yeah. And Dana, honey, you did not shoot your dad. Your mom did that shit, okay? God, that is so messed up to blame your kid.
It worked.
Like I said, that kid's going to grow up at some point. Somebody is going to say something.
Mm-hmm. Or they're going to read it or something. You know, it's all over the papers.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, like, I don't look at papers from when I was born or when I was a kid. But, I mean, yeah, I do. But I'm weak.
You liar.
The normal person does not do that. But I mean, like, eventually... It's Independence, Missouri. It's not that big.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody she's going to school with is going to be like, dude, my mom told me that she shot her dad when she was a baby.
God.
You know what I mean? Crazy. Like, that would definitely happen.
I get it.
Oh, how terrible. So, but she didn't care. She just wanted to kill her husband to get some money.
It's all about the money.
Yes, it was.
Wow. Yeah. Nice story. Well,
thank you.
Not nice, but good.
Crazy.
One.
Crazy.
Yeah. Unbelievable that she's still out there. Or,
I know.
Lived her life free to an extent.
Pretty much. I think she was 29 when she...
Oh, hell.
Broke out of prison. Walked out of prison.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Gosh. 29. So she's been out there all those years just... Living her life. Six probably plus. Sitting somewhere on a Mexican beach drinking margaritas, the bitch. So, there's Sharon Kenny. That's the story.
I like it.
It's crazy. Too. All right. No new reviews this week.
Aww.
We have had a lot of visitors to the website. Thank you. That's fun.
That's cool. Are you keeping stuff up to date on it?
No. But that's what I'm going to do this week.
Vacation's over.
I know.
Time to get over. To it.
But I'm also not in class for a few weeks, so it gives me time to catch up on stuff.
No excuses now. That was always your excuse.
It was. I was like, I have so much homework.
But, now you got to keep up with stuff.
All right. Contact us. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll send you something pretty. We have some kind of cool stuff coming up. Maybe some changes that are going to happen. Stuff like that.
You better keep me in the loop.
No.
What? I don't want to find out on here.
You find out a lot of things on here.
I know. This is so wrong.
All right, guys. Have a fantastic week. Stay safe. Don't get sick. All that.
Don't get sick.
Mm-hmm. Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane. Hey, we say that a lot at CrossFit.
It's always CrossFit. It always comes back to CrossFit.
All right, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us again. And this has been a good time.
Yep.
Till next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.